a tape of this conversation. And then I'm going to give Neil a copy of the tape. So if any of you would like a copy of the MP3 file, you can do that. Plus, I'm going to give Neil a copy of these PowerPoints. So if any of you would like a copy of the PowerPoints, they're available to you. I wear three hats. Hat number one is I'm executive in residence here at the Sawyer Business School. I'm here 2 days a week. I teach organization behavior. Hat number two is I have my own business. In 1979, my partner Marianne and I started Stibel Peabody Lincolnshire. We do career coaching, executive level outplacement. We do retain search for CEOs and board members. Today we have 250 consultants in 25 U.S. cities and in 31 countries around the world, including Ireland. We're known as Abora Global. So that's what I do. And my third hat is I write a column on careers and leadership for Harvard Business Review. So if you type my name, Stibel, and Harvard Business Review, you can see all the junk that I wrote. Plus, I have some URLs here to articles that I've written. Plus, I got my business card here, so if anybody wants to contact me, you're welcome to do so. Topic today is management by the numbers, and the number is 3. And this isn't working. So. You could? Yeah. That'd be great. So next. You've been to Ireland? I think that's nice, isn't it? 70s? 18 centigrade?
For Ireland, it's nice.
Good.
Would be nice for here, too. But it'll be rainy, and they call it blustery, whatever that means. And the good news is that Cork is going to be hiring 250 people. They're expanding their operations. Cork. Another good news is that since you've been in town, the markets have gotten less jittery. If you've been following the stock market, it's not going as crazy as it has been. So don't leave town. Okay, next. I call this ideas to action. Again, I'm not a professor. I'm an executive in residence. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a business guy, just like you. So I'm really not interested in ideas for ideas' sake. I'm really interested in, does this change your life? Does this change your practice? Does this make you more effective? So if there's anything that I talk about in this program that's of any interest to you and you want to actually implement that, I'm going to give you a free offer. I'm going to give you an hour consultation by Twitter to help you move any of these ideas into action if you wish to do so. And if you don't want to do that, that's fine too. But if you want to and you want to use me, you got an hour free. Okay? Next. My goals for today, why is the number 3 so powerful? And then 3 questions to ask when taking on a new assignment. And then finally, 3 questions to ask to sell an idea or a product. How many of you are in sales and marketing? Okay. So next, I got this off the internet. 417 rules for bold leadership. That's ridiculous. That's really stupid. Next, equally stupid. This is an American sticker. It probably is part of the Tea Party. When you can reduce the complexity of the global economy to a simple sentence, you usually know you're wrong. So somewhere between being too complex, 417 rules, and 1, what's the right number?
3.
3! Damn! He's good! All right, next. I got inspired this summer reading a book about Steve Jobs and why he's such a great presenter. And they said what he uses is the power of 3. He's always talking about 3 things at the same time. And the book said 3 is a magic number. And I said, no, that can't be. Why is it a magic number? Any Roman Catholics in the room? Okay. So when the Roman Catholics talk about God, they talk about the Father, the Son, the Holy Ghost. 3. Okay. Then When the Jews talk about God, they talk about the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Three. My favorite nursery rhyme was Three Blind Mice. Three. My favorite little story when I was growing up was The Three Little Pigs. But then when I got older, my favorite story was The Three Musketeers. My favorite comedians, The Three Stooges. Then as I got older, I went to college. And what I learned was the colors, there are three primary colors. And then I took theater and I learned that a play has three acts. And then I learned that in any drama, there's only three roles. There's the hero, there's the villain, and there's the person in distress. And a plot twist is defined as when you think the person is distressed, it actually turns out to be the victim or the villain. You know, in other words, you change the, but it's still the same three. Three. So we got, oh yes, my two favorite movies, Harry Potter. Is Harry Potter about Harry Potter? No. Harry Potter is about three people, right? Last shot, how many of you saw the last Harry Potter movie? Last shot, it's three people. My favorite is Star Wars. Is Star Wars about Luke Skywalker? No, it's about three people. Leia, Luke, and Han Solo. How many of you saw? Can any of you think about how the number three has figured in your lives?
Three kids.
Hmm? What was it?
Three kids.
Okay. That's magic.
Being middle of that.
Any? Yeah, three strikes and you're out in the baseball. Any other where three makes sense, or is it maybe just a U.S.
Third
issue?
Time lucky.
Third time's a charm. Okay. Anything else?
It comes in threes.
Okay.
Three wise men.
Three wise men comes in threes. Three, 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 three. Now, there's actually some science behind this. If you put the next one. Next. This is a relatively new piece. I have a copy if any of you would like a copy of the piece. It came out in January of this year. There was a classic article in psychology in 1957 by a guy named Miller, and the title of the piece was The Magic Number 7 Plus or Minus 3. And what he did was he took college juniors and he had them try to remember nonsense syllables or numbers. And what he found was that if you take the average college junior, college sophomore, and give them nonsense syllables, they can pretty much remember about seven. Some of the really good ones can remember up to 10, and or as little as five. So he came up with this article called The Magic Number 7 Plus or Minus 3. She said, you know, this is nonsense. The world doesn't work that way. First of all, adults don't remember nonsense syllables. Adults remember concepts. You're not given tasks to remember nonsense syllables. You have to remember concepts. So if we look at how many concepts can somebody remember in their head, it's about 3 to 5. And then you just start forgetting it. So the magic number is 3. And there's science behind it. So What's the practical implication? Is that when you're trying to make a proposal to a customer, think about the three benefits. When we are working with job candidates on their jobs, and we're working on their resumes, we have called an executive summary at the top of the resume. Do you have that too?
Yeah.
And we say, don't load it up with seven things that you've done. Focus on the top three issues that will be important to that reader. Three. I've got an interview in next week to be on the board of directors of a company, and I know they're going to say, well, what can you do for us? I'm going to say, there are three things I can do for you. One, two, three. So I'm trying to use the magic number three, because three people can grasp. If you do too little, you're not covering the bases. If you do too much, you're not. Does that make sense? So focus on three. How can you use three? Here's an example from the work that I do. I work with leaders who have just gotten new jobs, and we have something called onboarding. I'm sure you have that in Ireland too. And is that familiar, onboarding? No? It's when a new leader comes in, either because they were promoted or they come from outside, but particularly when they're strangers. Any mistakes that are made in the first 3 weeks count significantly more to harm them than the same mistakes that might be made a year later, right? Because a year later, if I do something stupid or awful, I have enough track record with me that you can say, well, you must be having a bad day. Or I have enough track record with you to say, well, okay, Larry screwed this one up, but you know, he's done some favors for me in the past. So I have some IOUs. But if you don't know me and I screw up, you're going to make personality attributions about me. You're going to say, well, he is cheap, he's mean, he's stupid, he's superficial. You know, you personality stuff. So that's called onboarding. And next, I'm going to give you a really, really stupid example. But I'm going to show you how the stupid example exists in your life. I have an iPad that I'm going to look to sell to you. This is an iPad 1. And an iPad 2 has come out, so I want the latest and greatest. So if you can buy my iPad, and I'll sell it to you for a really good price, $400. That's a really good price for an iPad. Then I can take the money and I can buy an iPad 2. So that could be a win-win. But we're going to sell it under certain conditions. If you can turn it on. You can turn it. Yep. Now, would you confirm that that it works?
Yeah.
Okay. So you have confirmed that this works. Okay? Now, you notice that this has a cover. Mm-hmm. Would you like to see the back of the cover before you buy this?
Yes.
Okay. I won't show it to you.
Why?
None of your business.
You spent too much.
You see that?
Yeah.
Ask me what it's for.
What's that for?
We won't talk about that.
Okay.
Could I sell him this iPad under those stupid conditions?
Yeah.
I forgot who I was talking to. All right. Now, instead of an iPad, now let's substitute the iPad for an opportunity. You are a job candidate at a company. And you're looking at a job. What's your name?
Owen.
You're looking for
Owen.
Okay, Owen. What we have is opportunity. We need change, and you look like a change kind of manager. We don't want the status quo. We want change. Can you do the change? Now, key lesson for today is, every time somebody says the word change, think of change as a three-dimensional object like an iPad. And change is one of the dimensions. But, you know, there's always this. And that's the back of this device. And the back of this device is, every time somebody says change, then your next question should be, what do you want not to change? What do you want to keep? What do you want to preserve? What do you want to honor? Because I do a very lively business with people who bought the idea that they were change agents and never asked the second question. What do you want not to change? Here's a really stupid example in a university. I know it sounds stupid, but it's very common. We need you to increase the academic standards of this place. You know, we don't publish enough research. Oh, and you're just the right guy to be president of this university and increase our standards. Can you be a change agent? Can you make it happen? Owen says, absolutely. I'm a change agent. I can make it happen. What I don't tell you is what I don't want to change is I don't want to get people upset. Well, as we say in America, you can't make an omelet without breaking eggs. So here are the three-by-three questions. Three questions. Each question has three levels. Next. The first question is, what's to be changed in the next X months? What's your name?
John.
John, I got an assignment for you, and you're going to be doing this, this, this. You're going to get promoted to this, this, this. Here's what needs to be changed. Fine. That's this part of this. What's to be changed? And then John should say, okay, that's great. What do you want to see changed in the next 3 months in the following three areas? Business processes. How do we do things around here? Next is people and culture. What do you want to see changed? And then finally, technology. What do you want to see changed in technology? That's easy. And that's really easy to answer. Next slide. Here's the question that most people don't ask. And because they don't ask the question, that's how they get into trouble. What do you want to see honored and left alone in the next X months? I'm separating those two things. What do you want to see honored, and what do you want to see left alone? Honored is, these are the things that got us to where we are today. This makes us the great company we are today. Don't screw it up. Left alone is, you know, maybe our statistical process control could be better. But right now, it's not a major problem. We can deal with it in next year. But this, don't bother with it. There are other things that are more important. So what's to be honored or left alone in the next X months? Business processes, same thing. Culture and people. And finally, technology. And then next slide. And finally, every company's got third, what we call in America, third rails. If you touch this, you surely will die. I remember a situation where a vice president of sales is told, we want you to increase the sales, we want you to increase the market share, we want you to really, can you be a change agent, can you turn this around? Absolutely, I can. 4 weeks into that, he identifies a weakness, which happens to be the salesperson in New York City. Nobody tells him that this weak salesperson is the daughter of the chairman of the board. He should have known about it. He should have been told about it early on. Every company has third rails. How many of you from scientific and technology companies, medical device companies? Okay, I find the most insidious thing in scientific-based companies is when you ask them, what are the third rails? Touch this and I will surely die. They say, we're a science and technology-driven company. Nothing is sacred here. When anybody says nothing is sacred, what they mean is we won't talk about it with you. But you should, if you're in a job interview, you should still ask, because you get brownie points just for asking. So, three questions, three levels of each question. Can anybody think about circumstances in your lives where you ask a question like that, or you didn't ask a question like that. Circumstance in your life where you basically bought the iPad. So basically what we're saying is, anytime somebody offers you an opportunity, it's three dimensions. Change, what do we not change, and what are the things, if I touch it, I will surely die. Can anybody give me an example in their own lives or somebody that they know where you bought the front of the iPad, but you didn't ask about this side?
Office will come down and they'll have this brand new initiative that's the best links in sliced pan. And they say, we all have to do it. And we just go ahead and do it because we know if we question it, we'll be seen as troublemakers within the organization. And that's not what management are looking for. They're looking for a yes man.
That's a problem if that's what they're looking for. What's the industry that you're dealing with? Yeah. That's the problem, isn't it? I was looking at, if you read the autopsies of Lehman Brothers, this is exactly what happened at Lehman Brothers. There was a woman who was director of risk management. And she tried to point out that some of these collateralized mortgage loans seemed to be too risky. And Mr. Fuld, who was chairman of the board and CEO, who was a very aggressive sales guy, thought that she was being negative, which she was, and she got fired. But she was right. So yeah, it is a problem. The only suggestion that I would have, and again, how many of you are senior managers and how many of you are senior managers? Anybody? How many are middle managers? Okay. The only suggestion that I would suggest that you do is to try to create a framework, a policy. I don't mean that in a corporate sense, but that anytime we get some ideas, there's going to be a set way that we're going to ask questions about those. And it doesn't mean we're negative, doesn't mean we're hostile, it's just the questions that we ask. And you could go through something like this. We'll ask these questions in this manner to make sure we're covering everything. If you do it as a policy issue as opposed to a specific issue, they may accept it. But certainly right now, if you're looking at the whole financial services industry around the world, but in particularly in Europe, risk management is a non-trivial issue. So you can basically frame what you're talking about from a risk management point of view. Any other examples in your own lives or work lives?
Shortly after graduating as an engineer, I was asked to fix a process for the company. So I bought a machine, we fixed the process.
Yep.
And when I brought it into the company, somebody asked me what it did, and I said, well, it's going to fix our process, but it's also going to replace 48 people. Now, I didn't know we had a union at the time.
Yep.
So I hadn't asked the, do not touch this, and you sure did. Yeah, I got killed by 48 people pretty quickly.
Yeah. Anybody else? But do you understand how the stupid example that I was giving about selling the iPad, that's how we take assignments all the time. So just get in the model of asking three questions. What's to be changed? That's great. What's to be preserved and honored? And what are the touches and you will surely die? And if any of you are in job search mode, asking questions like touch this and you will surely die will bring smiles, and they'll love you for it because every organization's got it. They just won't tell you that they have it, but that's okay. The fact that you asked, you get brownie points because you asked. Suggest that you know. Any questions? Okay, next. If any of you would like more information about this, again, Anil is going to have all of the slides. I think he's going to put it on a website for any of you. These are articles that I've written about these things in more detail, so you can go through them in more detail. Next. Next. So here's my third and final piece. What are the three questions to ask to sell a product or a concept? Now, I've got to say, I'm just talking about me as a sales guy and the questions that I ask when I'm trying to sell, and what I sell is professional services. So this may or may not apply to you. Here are the three questions. The first question is, what are the issues that are most important to you over the next 12 months? You can phrase it any way you want. I've got some people that say, you know, what are the issues that keep you up at night? Oh, what are the things that are going to be most important to your success over the next 12 months? What I find is by asking that question in that way, it's an open-ended question. I'm not looking like I'm trying to sell my product or service or come up with an idea. I'm trying to understand what's important to you. If I'm trying to counsel an employee or even work with a boss, what's the most important things for you over the next 12 months? If it turns out that the things that are important to them are not things that I am selling, fine, so be it. I would rather use the opportunity to refer them to somebody who could meet their needs, so that when I leave the room, I'm perceived as somebody, a valued relationship, rather than a sales guy. So that's my first question. Next. And what happens if that issue is not dealt with properly? Next. And then what happens then if that happens? So it's three levels of question. What are the most important things that you're going to be dealing with over the next 12 months? And what happens of the issues if not dealt properly? And then what happens? Three levels, three questions. Next. Let me give you an example. I'm retained by a company to work with a manager of marketing. He's been laid off. I'm finding it's a very difficult job market, and I'm trying to teach people to be very aggressive, more aggressive than they normally are. And I just can't get to this guy. And he just doesn't show up for meetings. He seems to be very negative. And when he shows up, he just goes through the motions. And he only does the easy stuff. And I remember I forgot to ask my three questions. So here are the three questions that I asked him. I say, what's the most important things to you over the next 12 months? Oh, no, well, number one is getting a job. Absolutely. Number one is getting a job. And okay. And what happens if you don't get a job? Well, if I don't get a job, my career is over. And then what happens if your career is over? Oh, I'll go back to the summer house and I'll live off my daddy's trust fund. And I'll write the great book that I've always been wanting to write. Okay, fine. Cool. So if I had known that day one, I wouldn't have been bashing him over the head. Why isn't he doing a more aggressive job search? It's because I wasn't asking the right questions. I'm hired by a board of directors to work with a president. The chairman of the board says, we're starting to lose respect of the CEO, which is a code word that the CEO is probably one or two votes short of getting fired. So I go to the president and I say, okay, here's what the board has said. What's the most important thing that you want to accomplish with me over the next 12 months? Dummy, I want to keep my job. And what happens if you don't keep your job? Well, I will be fired, and it will probably be in the New York Times that I'm fired, and I'll probably be unemployable. And what happens then? My wife will probably divorce me, because our marriage is based on my being president, and my status as being president. And so now I have the leverage. It turns out, and I didn't know it until I asked, it's saving his marriage that's the most important thing. He didn't really care that much about his job. He didn't need the money. It was his marriage that he was interested in. Fine. Now I got my leverage. Now I know how to leverage this guy. CFO. I'm hired by a company because the chief financial officer is upset because she was told that she's not in line to become the next chief executive officer of the company, and the reason that she is not in line to become the next chief financial CEO is that she's not strategic enough. And so again, I say to her, what's the most important thing that we can do together over the next 6 months? Oh, the most important thing we can do is to change how I'm perceived. I want to be perceived as a strategic player. And if that doesn't happen, what's going to happen? Well, what's going to happen is that I will probably not get the promotion to become CEO, and I will remain as CFO of this company. And if you remain as CFO in this company, then what? Well, if I don't get this promotion at this time, given what I've done for this company, I will never become CEO ever again. I will be CFO for the rest of my life. Now I've got my leverage. What's frightening her is that she will be chief financial officer for the rest of her life, and she'll never get a promotion. So if I'm looking to motivate her, it's not about being strategic. It's about you don't want to be CFO for the rest of your life. And I got that level by asking those three questions. Three. And again, if you want to, now what I like, I've got an exercise for you. Think about 2 weeks from now, when this is a memory and you're back home and you're back on the job. What are you trying? Think of a concept you're trying to sell. Could be a person, a boss, subordinate. It could be a product that you're trying to sell to somebody else. Think of something you're going to be doing in 2 to 3 weeks from now. How would you frame what we just talked about in ways that make sense for you? Think about it and write it down, and let's talk about it. I've asked them to be quiet and write their names 25 times until you walk in the room.
Kindergarten.
Right, right.
You guys are kindergarten, yeah?
All of our teachers are like,
funny. Yeah, I was in kindergarten. My teacher wouldn't sleep for an hour after that.
All right, does anybody come up with anything? I'm looking for something you can use 3 weeks from now. What's your name?
Kalanda.
Kalanda?
Yeah.
What a lovely name.
Thank you.
Have you got anything?
I have. I'm in the process of introducing succession planning, so like, it would be good for the interviews for asking
yes.
people, like, you know, what's their plan for the next 12 months, what happens if they don't get there, and
yep.
identify the drivers, really the motivators.
Perfect. Perfect. Anybody else? It's very good for when you're talking to employees and saying, okay, what would you like to achieve in the next 12 months that will be consistent with my objectives as your boss? And what happens if you don't get it? And then what happens? The other thing, you can turn it around. Okay, what are your plans over the next 12 months? What happens if you do get it? And then what happens? You know, problems are sort of like onions. If you just deal with the first layer of the problem, you're really not probably dealing with the layer. On the other hand, who's got the time and to go through 24 layers of the onion? So we're talking about going three levels.
The Japanese have a system where you have to ask 5 questions to get the real answer.
Oh, well, that's... That's the Japanese. Well, even then, again, the research said people can deal with 3 to 5 different concepts. So, yeah, I can. Five can work. But again, I'm an American. I'm dealing with an American audience. We have terminal attention deficit disorder.
You must have 2 other things as well. That's just
1
problem.
Yeah.
The 3 problems.
Anybody, have you got some?
Kalanda's big into the power of 3. I got his speeches, and he even pauses after each one.
Who is Obama?
It's mm-hmm. See the key words. Mm-hmm. I'm going to use it for my son actually to start college because.
Okay, fine. So I'm your son. What would you say?
What are the issues that are going to be most important to you in this first year?
Yep.
And what happens if you don't get through? Some of your subjects.
Yeah.
Then what happens?
I think, you know, particularly for adolescents and young adults, you know, that thought process, the logic, is a very useful framing device. And again, what I would suggest with your son is simply say, look, I went to this program in Boston. And we were taught a certain way of asking questions. So I'm going to use that certain way of asking questions, but it's also a way that you can ask questions of yourself. So that the you're teaching a technique rather than, you know, trying to get at the kid's soul or something like that. You know, it's just a technique. That's all you're doing. Anybody else? It's a great application. Anybody else? Owen?
I've in the areas I look after, there's a quality approval of the product that's manufactured in the area.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So as an efficiency thing, what we're trying to do is maintain that quality approval and move it closer to the back door.
Yep.
So we can get more of the work done up front,
mm-hmm.
push it through. And I know that there'll probably be some resistance to maybe doing that because of free change and it's kind of a conservative environment at times. So that's kind of what I'm looking at there. You know, what are the issues that, or problems that you'll see that might happen if we were to do that?
Mm-hmm. Good. You know, ultimately, you know, a lot of times when you're trying to raise efficiencies and you ask the three questions, the third question is, and I'll lose my job. So you got to deal with that. Anybody else have, you got any ideas?
Yeah, I'm in construction.
Okay.
One of the projects has to be finished by the end of January.
Okay.
And I've got a junior engineer on the job with a great personality, but not a huge amount of experience.
Mm-hmm.
And he's on a temporary contract, and if it doesn't finish on time, his contract won't be renewed. So I want to make sure that he knows, you know, it's got to finish on time. If he doesn't, he won't have his job renewed. And then what will that mean for him?
Right. And yeah, the interesting thing is, if you ask that question in the third way, what you may find is that the thing that really bothers him the most is not necessarily losing the job, but the reference that he might get from you, or what you might say about him in the community. Now you know what the leverage is. It's your good word. You know, in other words, what's your leverage to get somebody to do what you want them to do? And this is a technique for doing that. What's your leverage to get a buyer to buy the what you want them to buy? And this is your leverage to do it. What I do in my business is, okay, what are the issues that are most important to you? We got to have to let go 15 people. And what happens if that's not handled in a smooth way? Well, we're going to be spending a lot of more money. We'll have legal costs. And what happens then? Oh, our reputation is trashed in the community. Okay, now I got it. It's really not the legal costs. It's your reputation that's keeping you up at night. And I'm here to help you with your reputation. Okay, I got it. Does that make sense? Any questions? Okay, next. Next. Okay, so summary. We've talked about three things. One, why is the number three magic? Not only is it magic, there's some science behind it, and if you would like a copy of the report, I can give it to you. Two, we talked about three questions to ask when taking on new assignments. Remember the iPad example. And then finally, three questions to ask if you want to sell an idea or product. Ask three questions. Get to the third level. Next. Again, just to repeat the offer, this is an Ideas for Action talk. I'm here not to give you good ideas. I'm here to help you with your practice. And I'm here to help you be more effective. If any of you want to try out any of these ideas in your work, I'll be glad to spend up to an hour on Skype with you to help make that happen. Or you try things out and it doesn't work for you, let's talk about it. Next. If you're interested in any of these things, here are some other articles that I have written for Harvard Business Review that might be of interest. And it gets into some other issues revolving the number three. One is three questions to ask if you are successful at work or not. This is a piece which is one of my favorite, which is how to manage your enemies. And next. One of the things that I did this summer was I started reading William Yeats's poetry. And I think Yeats is probably the best poet to write in the English language in the 20th century. He's fabulous. So I just thought I'd conclude with one of his poems. Thank you very much. I hope you have a wonderful trip, and I'm glad you were here to our city.
Very un-B. behalf of the class, the MBA class, we'd like to give you this token of appreciation for the...
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a wonderful flight and safe journeys.
Thank you.
Thanks, my pleasure.
You guys want to take 5 minutes to your legs and we'll come back and just have a wrap-up?
Yes, okay. We'll all be out here at 4:20.
Thanks
again. Sure, no problem.
All right, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
I really appreciate it.
Oh, sure, nice. Good group.
See you again in 2 years. With help of God.
It would be my pleasure.
I'm delighted to see you.
One day I hope to. My wife is from County. My wife's relatives are from County Clare.
Oh, very nice. Okay.
So we went to County Clare, spent 2 weeks, had a lovely time.
Well, drop me an email if you're around.
Sure.